beyond.info. And No Borders Radio. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Greetings, brothers and sisters, around this beautiful spinning blue-green globe, just about to burst forth with some new growth. Isn't this wonderful? We're here. Tonight I will be speaking with a guest who I first had on my show on the previous Monday, last Monday at Revolution Radio, Journeys with JP. You can check it out in the archives. A fascinating person to listen to. She has many stories, much information, and what's best is that she's British. She's got a lovely accent. I just love listening to her, and gives me this kind of it's kind of, I mean, where I grew up, this is the general accent vibration. So it's lovely to have you back on. Your name is a number. Can I just call you Seven for short? This is Ms. Seven. Hello, how are you doing? Seven? Are you there? You still on? Oh. She dropped off the call. Sorry about that. I did this big intro and you weren't there. So, Ms. Seven, how are you?
Hi, Jay. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
It's lovely. It's we've had a rather nice day here in northern Scotland. It's not over hot, it's just been very pleasant. So welcome. And you're somewhere in England, I presume?
Yes, I am. I'm in the northwest of London, and it's been an interesting day. It's always an interesting day with me, whether it be a good one or a bad one. It's certainly always interesting, I'll tell you that much. But thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. And hello to all the listeners out there.
That's lovely. That's lovely. Thank you for coming back on, Ms. Seven. So we were into a conversation and we ran out of space. So yeah. I'd just like you to reopen the gate and away you go.
Okay, well, we were talking about basically my experience as a targeted individual and my situation, which also has links to the 7/7 bombings and shooting of John Charles Menendez, the Brazilian, the innocent Brazilian, I may add.
Absolutely. And, they thought he was an Arab because he had slightly brown skin. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he was Brazilian. But I think it was a lot more, how can I say? I don't think it was they thought anything of the sort. I think they knew exactly who he was. And it was deliberate. Unfortunately, that was a ritualistic sacrifice of the worst kind, you know, and unfortunately for many of us that have the knowledge of what was really going on, it's a harrowing tale to have the burden, if you like, of telling. You know, there is a duty and responsibility for me personally, to the families and to the public, because of the fact that so much hogwash and bogus nonsense has been spun in the public domain. Unfortunately for us, they control the major part of the information that goes out to the public. And when you are, you know, just an ordinary person without the economic infrastructure and, you know, just the
wherewithal.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have the ability to get out to as many people, but the truth has a way of surfacing and shutting down the lies, and that's something that I've always kept with me. It's kept me going in a way. It's spawned me on. It's made me believe that there's going to come a time and a day where the mass populace know the truth, you know that what has been told as to the facts behind the London bombings and actually the shooting of John Charles is absolutely lies. And there are people that were involved who I will name today. And again, in case anybody that's listening didn't hear the show on Monday, I will actually name check the people again. I'm happy to go over as much as, you know, obviously there might be some people who have heard the first show that we did on Monday, who already know. But for listeners who don't know, the first thing I will say is that there is a report. It's very comprehensive, and it does detail the background of my case, which began in 2003. It's called the Farrell Report, and that's F-A-R-R-E-L-L, report, R-E-P-O-R-T, .net. So if you go on to the website, thefarrellreport.net, you will see that there's been a report on my journey, if you like, over the last 10 years, which began in 2003 when I became targeted by the criminal cartel involved. I think these days they call them the cabal, don't they? You know, the satanic cabal or whatever. You know, there's a lot of terminology. Some of them I don't really use, to be honest. I just see that these are individuals that have kind of given themselves titles in order to try to get rid of accountability for their actions. I do believe that in my experience of these people, I do believe that they are demonically possessed. I think for anybody to have done and engineered some of the things that I've witnessed with my own eyes and experienced over the last 10 years, you've got to have lost your mind completely to have engaged in any of that stuff.
Mm.
So I do feel there is we're dealing with spiritual warfare.
Can I just come in at this point, because this is one of the situations that I have discussed with various guests on the show, and this is and it's a particularly particular favorite for my co-host Katie Galanti. We have a show next Sunday, and we're always talking about the externalization of satanic ritual.
Absolutely.
Which is basically all of the things that happen are designed to create a field of fear.
Yes.
And the more people that are involved, the greater the field of fear that you can, and it can be used as an energy, but it's also a food for the worst kind of creature imaginable. And these are the creatures that control the people that we call the cabal, because they're like spirits that they invoke during a, you know, you see them, see it in films, don't you? You see they're all standing around in a circle, and there's the pentagram in the circle, and they bring out some creature or some thing, and the creature has a deal, you know, and there's always a contract, because the universe is all about contract. But here we have something that is kind of, it's a, like a global project that has been going on for a very, very long time. And in order to fuel their takeover, as it were, and it's a bit like, you know, they've got a plan, they've, you know, they've got a name, but they haven't really got a plan. in order to fuel their takeover, they need a large amount of energy, of psychic energy, and that's what they get by creating these events. For instance, imagine being able to channel all the shock and fear of what would happen in a crowded tube station when a man is shot to death in front of their eyes. Imagine, you don't need to imagine, you can taste it. That energy is what they use, and that is what feeds the beast. So
that, amongst many other things.
I mean, amongst many other things. But this is the thing. It used to be done in little dark centres, you know, little dark basements. But now it's done in vast places. This whole, all the Olympic things, you know, that weird baby. Those odd feelings that people were generating. Large numbers of people generating a sense of weird. Somebody's got to feed on that.
Absolutely. I mean, you only have to look at some of the entertainment and the TV and film productions that come out to see that there is a very demonic force at work. Today, I was looking at a billboard, or not quite a billboard, but on the side of a bus, they've got a movie that they're pushing at the moment, which is called Conjuring or something like that. And apparently it's based on true events, and they say it's worse than Scream or some of their other demonic productions. And you look at this and you think, what kind of mind would create that and want it plastered all over a bus that goes across the city, and where members of the public will watch and have a look at that with the mindset of getting that and bringing it into their home, whether it be via DVD or going to a cinema or whatever, and actually taking that into their psyche as a pleasurable pastime. I mean, what sort of mind? You have to think about that. I mean, most people just buy these movies or they watch these movies and, you know, they don't think about what the agenda is. But there's always an agenda. And when you look at the selling of fear in the way that it's conducted, it's so blatant. It's so blatant. When you look at false flags, for instance, 7/7, which we were talking about, you know, it's all very extremely ritualistic, and it's a game. There's so many aspects to it that, you know, the more that I, you know, have to talk about this and just, you know, in walking my mind back through events that I've personally lived through and knowing what was going on, it's still, to this day, I mean, we're talking 8 years on, and to this day, I still shudder to think that there are human beings, or, I mean, that's questionable. I mean, lots of people say that.
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute.
That's another whole new ball game. But, you know, you really, for me, I still cannot fathom. You know, I would have thought by now that they would have confessed, because there's so much information out there. I mean, there's been some phenomenal researchers on YouTube and some of the just social networks and different radio stations that I've come across over the more recent times. I think for me, in the last 10 years, I think I spent the first 5 of the last 10 years realizing how much people had been mind controlled. And that was a major blow to me as well, because it was like being in a world, or entering a realm, you know, having a rude awakening by the circumstances that were unfolding in front of me. And I'll go into them a little bit in a minute. But it was basically, for me, having this rude awakening, these people invading my life, they stole my intellectual property and then put this whole operation around me in order to keep me quiet and not sort of spill the beans of what was going on. And pretty much like corruption, like you see in Enron or any of these types of corporations on that scale, but on this occasion, we weren't talking about, it's still energy, I guess. I mean, Enron was an energy company, wasn't it? But in my case, it was intellectual property that was being peddled as the new oil, if you like. And because I was a creative individual who had developed a multimedia platform of mainstream TV productions, which could be marketed on a global scale, had something that they wanted, that they knew that they could generate vast amounts of revenue from in a very short amount of time, and also use, as I later discovered, to pacify and distract the public to, you know, that what was really going on behind the scenes. And when I discovered that all this madness was going on and I was in the center of it, I trying to wake people up around me was what was even more shocking, because the level of, you know, dumbing down or control of people, and even the belief, it's amazing that so many people gave so much belief to the news, the information that comes out via mainstream media. I think a lot of people back then, much more than now, was really sold, and, you know, in terms of what they saw as being news was factual. But in reality, it's all scripted and it's got nothing whatsoever to do with the truth. They make it up as they go along, you know. But now, in the latter 5 years, I've met people that are astounding. Much like yourself, you know, people who are extremely switched on, extremely aware of what's going on, and have been able to decode and decipher and also expose the whole game. And that's exactly what it is. It's a game. And I actually believe that these individuals, a lot of them are fear-based individuals themselves. They are consumed by fear, mainly because they've been compromised in their actions. I think there's definitely a hierarchy. The people in my case in particular, which was called Seven versus Gossage and Nine Others, and I'll read out the names of the people in a minute, I think those, the people that I've had dealings with who stole my intellectual property, they are at the sort of top of the malevolent chain, if you like, or pyramid. You know, you've got hierarchy of, you've got some people that are involved that have been compromised in one way or another because they've had a bribe or they've done something, you know, they got them on camera playing about with a little boy or taking cocaine or whatever it is. And they usually put people into positions of power, public office in one place or another, in order to facilitate the people that they want to be in those positions. And, you know, some people who have the belief that you are what you do between 9 and 5, get sort of bought into that. You know, there are some people that think, you know, if I get this job, if I have this amount of money, if I have this car, you know, then I'll have made it, and, you know, I'll be seen by my peers as somebody very special, etc., etc. But we know that's a load of nonsense. You know, power is an internal thing, and it is the most humble thing. You know, I think the, you know, if you look at water as a substance, how much power it has, and it is the most kindest, wonderful form of creation that there is. So there is a misconception about power, which I think makes a lot of people run to do the bidding of these cabalist kind of demonic individuals. But there is a hierarchy. But in relation to the people that are in my case, I think they're at the top of the very, they're at the top of the pyramid as far as really giving themselves over to the forces of evil. It appears to me, from what I've witnessed over the last 10 years, that I sit and try to fathom what makes people do the sort of things that I've witnessed these people do. And it's a question that I have to repeatedly ask myself in order to try to make sense of the madness that I've watched unfold before my eyes over the last 10 years. And I think really these people are, they're probably a combination of in deeply, deeply, deeply brainwashed and deeply, deeply, deeply in a state of fear. So much fear that they can't go forward and they can't go back. They've done so many horrific things in the pursuit of wealth, greed, lust, and all those, ugly things. They've gone deeply within it to the point where I don't know if they can ever even look at themselves and even tell themselves that what I'm talking about is real. I think, they believe because they control media and positions of economic power, because it's not real power, it's just economic power. They've managed to racketeer vast amounts of money and bribe themselves into the top positions as far as the pyramid is concerned. And in doing so, have probably convinced themselves that they're invincible, they're untouchable, they're connected to a lot of other people with that same paradigm. And the reality is that they're no different from anybody, really. They've just convinced themselves and that they are more important and to be feared, if you like. But the reality is these are the people that fear most of all. You know, these people are terrified because they've gone so far with evil. You know, they've basically been given an opportunity to fulfill their darkest wishes and taken it to the very extreme in their conduct. And I don't think they actually believe that they will ever account. And it's like that for people that get seduced by corruption. You know, in the Enron crisis, I was watching the movie. I don't know if anybody out there has watched the Enron movie. I think it's called The Smartest Men in the Room, something like that. And it showed you the journey of them kind of becoming successful and then fiddling the books and then, you know, stealing shareholder money, then lying and then more lies and then more corruption and then more fraud. And it just got bigger and bigger and bigger until the monster grew so huge. And in that, I think the individuals actually lost themselves into believing their own hype. They actually believed that they could continue down this path and it would be that way for them forever. I think the last guy, or I can't actually even remember his name, is it Skilly or something like that? I can't remember his name. But the head CEO of Enron, he actually was in the courtroom, or, you know, when they did the hearings about the collapse and the bankruptcy and what was really going on. And till the last day, even in handcuffs, he was still lying. You know, what was obvious to everybody, he still maintained this stance that, you know, he really didn't want to look at himself and face himself in the mirror and tell himself the truth. It was almost as if he didn't know the truth anymore. He'd convinced himself of his own lies, you know. And that's how these people are. They convince themselves of their insanity. They're completely insane. They're completely psychopathic. They've lost all empathy, value for human life, and even respect for themselves. You know, they have more respect for lies and corruption and that kind of thing. And it's been 10 years for me exposing these people. I didn't start exposing them after 7/7 took place. I'd been exposing them way before then. in 2003. And just to give the listeners a little bit of a summary of my journey, it began because I built this multimedia platform, which is a set of documents outlining the proposals and the plans to launch a mainstream set of mainstream TV productions, effectively a new genre, which was based on health and well-being, because my brother died at the age of 30 in 1992. Now, my brother was an incredibly special person, and I'm not saying that because he was my brother, and, you know, lots of people that know other people who have passed on say great things about people, and, you know, it's just because they've passed on. In my brother's case, I think every single person that you will ask about my brother will say the same thing. He was a very, very special individual. He never, ever had one bad word to say about anyone. Even people who had done him wrong, he still didn't have anything bad to say. He was like Buddha, you know, he was just the most incredible person. And I was fortunate that he was my eldest brother. And so in my journey with him, he taught me many, many things. He was very learned. He was into etymology and studying of words. He was studied Sanskrit, Tibetan Buddhism, which was called Lamaism, I believe. And so many things. I mean, I could be here all day talking about the things that my brother shared with me in my time with him.
What was his name?
Daniel Jean-Charles. Mm-hmm. And he left such a impression on me that in my young age, I believe, when my brother passed on, I just felt he should be celebrated in some way. I should do something as a testament to his life so that it would remain with the rest of the world. You know, he was such a gift to me and my family that I just wanted to share it. And that was what spawned me on to do the research, because he had an illness. So he was an asthmatic, and all his life he had suffered, you know, really terribly. And he had to go to a special school by the seaside, which had fresh air. He couldn't be in the city. And so we didn't get to see him all the time, you know, because we went to school in the city, whereas my brother went to a specialist school, which could be by the seaside and where he'd get fresh air and country life type thing. And so when he did come home, it was a major thing for all of us. You know, we couldn't wait to hear his stories and what have you. And he was very gifted. He was able to draw and write at a very, very young age. He could write, I think, I mean, he could write joined up handwriting at the age of 3 or something. You know, he was like a child prodigy as far as being gifted was concerned. There's so many things. I mean, I can't even begin to list the amount of things that were special about this young man. And so that was what really inspired my quest to do something within mainstream entertainment that would foster healing and, you know, just to tap into the collective consciousness of the people on a wide demographic scale, whereby it would inspire them to get well, fit, develop their sense of spirituality, if you like, to be inspired by dance and all kinds of fitness and what they ate, and just being conscious, you know, of the physical aspect of the human being, because obviously we are spiritual beings having a human experience. But as much as that, the human body is a vessel that has to be respected, and when finely tuned and looked after, can and will you know, helped you to achieve your optimum in terms of your life purpose, whatever that may be. For me, I believe that that was part of my journey to fulfill this, to bring healing to the general populace through this multimedia platform. And I have to say I've been very successful, even though it has been to my own detriment. The largest part of the population are not aware of the fact that the productions that I created, that I am the creator of, mainly because it has been silenced. And, you know, it's, for me, it's not an ego thing, you know, because I give, I like to give, I enjoy giving. But there's something different when somebody takes something from you and steals it from you. And not just steals it from you, this was something that was very sacred. It was, as I said, it was because of my brother that inspired it in the first place. But besides the fact that the documents were stolen and sold all over the world, besides that, the actual, the whole thought that these individuals, not just, they didn't just want to steal it, but they actually wanted to destroy me as well. That, I don't, you know, I can never, ever get my head around how anybody would want to do that. You know, they had enough money to pay me in the last 10 years, over and over and over again. They've had enough money, but they have not wanted to do that. They've wanted to ensure that not only would, that nobody would ever know that I was the creator of these very famous television productions, but they wanted to completely crush me and kill me. Now, I mean, that mindset, I just don't get it. I don't understand how human beings, that's why I talk about them being demonic, because the level of offensive and the witch hunt that was leveled against me and has been leveled against me, you really have to question. It was almost as if they had created it and I was trying to steal it from them. You know, this is something I've created. They've taken it. They've made vast amounts of money from it. It's all a household name. It's all very successful. They're all living in yachts and they've all propelled themselves to positions of power. Okay, but why do you want to ensure that the person who's created this is destroyed? I mean, does that make sense? I don't know, I don't get that. That's the bit that I never ever understood, and my witnesses never understood. Because as the weeks and months and years went on, it just got worse and worse and worse and worse until it got to the stage where I knew if I didn't go into hiding, I would not be here today telling the story. You know, I mean, I've been very fortunate that being a very spiritually motivated individual has helped me tremendously, and I cannot advocate enough for people to feed your spirit, develop your spirit. You know, we all have guides. We have celestial teams that are surrounding us on a daily basis. They educate us. They warn us when some danger is coming our way. And I've always been surrounded by angels throughout my darkest moments. And I mean, there were some very dark moments. I've always had angels turn up from out of the blue, you know, just at the right moment, who sent me a lifeline. And Tony Farrell, who has done this report with me, the Farrell report, which I mentioned, is one of those angels. I have, over the last 10 years, pretty much lived as a fugitive. And it's only since the report has gone live that I'm able to move a little bit more freer, you know. I mean, I'm always mindful, and there's always somebody who's out to attack me in some way or another. But I believe that there are physical angels around us. And that's one of the things that when you develop yourself as a spiritual being, that you come in contact with all the guardian angels. Some of them are your ancestors and people that have passed on from your family. Some of them are not just guardian, but you've got the archangels as well. And depending on your culture, you've got various other spiritual divine forces which will align themselves. If your heart is pure and if you're telling the truth, you will find that these forces will be there for you. And that's why, you know, for me, I've never feared, you know. I mean, people call me brave. I have people that say, you're a very brave, courageous woman, you know. I don't see myself as brave, really. I just see that, you know, why shouldn't I tell the truth? You know, the truth is something that everybody should be telling. You know, why do we live... Sorry,
I really have to just kind of have a quick word to my regular listeners know that I talk about the rays, and it will be crossing some of their minds as to what rays are in action here with you.
Okay.
So if, with your permission, could I share the rays that I spoke to you about?
Absolutely.
Okay, so our guest tonight goes by the name of Seven, Ms. Seven.
Yeah.
Okay, she's the seventh child. She's connected with 77, and Seven just appear in her world. So let's have a look at the rays. So when I read her the other day, she has Ray 1 Monad, Ray 4 Soul, and Ray 7 Personality. So. With those, I mean, basically, what we're talking about is that your very higher self is kind of plugged into the grid of truth that is like the galactic center of emanation of what is real, you know, that what the creation of reality and truth in this galaxy. And, you know, your soul ray is Ray 4, which I always call, you know, the soul ray is called the ray of harmony through conflict. But today's word for that is warrior.
Okay.
And when we're talking about a warrior, we're talking about the peaceful warrior. People think about samurai warrior, you know. They didn't always have their swords unsheathed. They were prepared. It was on their back. And they could, you know, whip it out at any time. But they had a rule, you know, when you whip it out, it has to taste blood. You know, you have to give it, you know, so they would never do it idly. And this is the essence of the spiritual warrior, is being a very peaceful person. But when it's time, you need to use the sword, you just use it. And the sword is the truth.
Yeah, it's the sword of truth.
And it's speaking truth to power, you know, when you get the opportunity to speak the truth. So there's your two rays. Now, most of the people on, who I've read the rays of, in this genre, as it were, most of the people who have got the 1-4, very rare. And they're like, all over the world in different places. They're like positions.
Can you give me an example of a 1-4?
Well, probably, I don't know if you know who he is, but his name is Aaron McCollum.
He's
very controversial. Some people say he's a fake, some people, you know, but he has those rays. I don't know if he's 147 or 14 something else. Not entirely sure, but he's definitely in the 1-4. And he's what's known as a super soldier, Generation 3. The person who runs the Wolf Spirit radio station, Dave Corso, is a super soldier Generation 1 from the... So he was, like, worked in the 1940s and 50s and things like that.
When you say super soldier, are you referring to... the psychic soldiers, the guys that are mind controlled to do
We're talking MK Ultra, talking implants, we're talking Mengele, we're talking, you know, the whole business. So we're very, very aware of all the issues that you've raised. We're very, very aware of it. And we have insight because we've got whistleblowers from the inside of that as well as from the other side.
Okay.
And so it's been very interesting because McCallum's been involved in things called MyLab. Have you heard of MyLab?
MyLab? Oh.
Military abduction.
Sorry?
Military abduction. And so basically these are people who are faking an alien abduction in order to... they've got the technology like they have in the Men in Black.
Okay, are you talking Project Bluebeam here?
No, many other projects, lots and lots of projects. Aaron was involved in Project Talent. Dave Corso and Duncan O'Finian, who were also part of this, and they were like Generation 1 and Generation 2. We don't know any Generation 4s, I don't think. But there are people like Max Spears and... Michael Prince, stroke James Casbolt. Have you heard those names?
I haven't heard any of the names that you've mentioned at all.
Okay.
Well, I may have watched their video. If they're on YouTube, I mean, I've seen thousands of videos on YouTube about this subject.
Yeah. Have you seen Camelot?
Camelot, yeah.
These guys are all on Camelot. You'll find them there. So
yeah,
anyway,
I've watched them, but probably can't remember their names. But I listened to their testimonies and things.
All right. So Aaron Cullum is the Dolphin Boy. He's on Project Hammer many years ago. You can check him out. So he's another one for, you know. So basically, you've got the energy that you'll find yourself in a place of incredible conflict. Right? The worst conflict is when your mind is being torn in two places. Okay? And so, you know, they do a job on you. That's what it is. All right?
Yeah.
They've done a job on you.
There's a lot of targeted people that have EMFs, which...
That's right. They do a job on you.
Voice to skull and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. All of these technologies. Yeah. We know we've got those technologies. We know they've got these technologies. And it can be discerned what is going on. You know?
Absolutely.
So it's like, we know your magic. We understand your magic. It's not magic. It's just... fakery. It's stagecraft.
Absolutely.
It's trickery.
Absolutely. And there's always the hand of God in all of these things. With all their engineering and manipulation, there always is a hand of God in these things that lets them down, you know, and exposes it for what it really is.
Well, exactly.
And they don't get it. You know, they still continue doing the same old bullshit, you know, and just... mind boggles.
it's why all the criminals, you know, whenever you see criminals in a film, there's always disorganization within the criminal element because everybody wants to be number one and it's like rats in a sack. If you're not doing a good thing, you will destroy yourself because you'll be hanging out with other people who don't want to do the good thing either. And they don't want to, you know, they don't have your best intentions either. You know,
absolutely.
There is no honor amongst these thieves.
Absolutely. And it's corrosive, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Eventually they eat themselves, you know, they destroy themselves.
So back to seven, let me just say, the seventh ray, so seventh ray personality is very orderly, it has a capacity for, very complex structuring things like law. Languages, like using language like slogans and things like that.
That's interesting.
You see, the seventh ray is the Aquarian age ray, and the sixth ray is the Piscean age ray. So what we're moving from is a time of sixth ray to a time of seventh ray. We're more or less there now. You know, this moment here, 2013, we're now in the seventh ray, and this is why all these sixth ray structures are breaking down. The old popes. I mean, look at the Pope. I was leafing through Facebook. The Pope has just announced that he's banning all reports of sex abuse in the church.
What?
Yes. I mean, it's just becoming openly Jesuit stroke Nazi, you know, because the Nazis and the Jesuits.
But yeah. that's somebody that's, you know, I mean, how can one individual say that they're banning? It's a bit like I was in court and this judge said, you know, I'm going to ban the audios. He made an order so that nobody could hear my audios ever, 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 ever. They will never be played again. This is from when I won my case. And I thought, who do you think you are? Do you really think that you're going to make an order and I'm going to, like a silly little rat, go off and say, oh, I'm not allowed to play them because the judge said I'm not allowed to play them to anybody anymore?
Yeah.
He's insane.
He's obviously not heard of BitTorrent either.
Heard of what?
BitTorrent.
BitTorrent.
All right,
say
maybe you've
again.
Not. Bit.
No, me neither.
BitTorrent, right? You know, okay. You hear people, I was downloading an album the other day, or I downloaded the whole series of Fringe, for instance.
Okay.
BitTorrent is how you do it. And what it does, it's called peer-to-peer networking, and one person or a group of people, or say, so one person's got a download. You might have, for instance, a bunch of audio somewhere on a server that is supposedly private, for instance. And say you gave a link to that, that people can then start copying that. So what happens is people will copy that, and so there'll be a couple of copies on the web. Every time somebody new copies it,
yeah,
it becomes more available because everybody can share. It's a complete sharing network. So every time there's a copy being made, it means that it will take less time for the next person to copy it because everybody, a little chunk comes from everybody. You see what I mean?
Okay. So I with you, yeah.
Anyway, so that's what BitTorrent is, and that's how things are, quote, pirated. But it's also a legitimate way of sharing information, but it's also a pirate way of sharing information, and presumably the paedophile network that is run by the satanic network that runs what we call our corporation government, and banks and, you know, the whole bit, that they presumably use BitTorrent in order to share their nasty stuff too. So there are tools out there that can make sure that those audios will never, ever be able to be destroyed.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I made loads of copies and played them to as many people as possible. And they're on the Barrel Report website that I mentioned earlier. If anybody wants to have a listen at the courtroom saga that took place, it was very, very favourable to me and not favourable to the other parties because they had no evidence.
And
et cetera, et cetera.
Seven.
Yeah.
It's the top of the hour. Let's throw a quick tune out, let people take a potty break and get their cups of tea and things. You said you enjoyed Joni Mitchell. Do you like Neil Young as well?
Neil Young? It would be the odd track. I wouldn't say his whole catalogue.
No, but anyway, this is Hey Hey My My. Excuse, because this is a bit of a hey, hey, wow kind of story. This is Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. So it's been a bit of a ride, here we are. We're on Ever Beyond. People, do check out everbeyond.info. I've just recreated the site. I'm actually going to do some blogs. I don't type, I don't do things much, because I don't, you know, in order to do a blog, you have to have a feeling behind it. It's like, I need to be sparked up, but, I was watching Fringe the other night, and I got sparked up to do a rant that was quite, you know, it turned out to be quite interesting insight into, our position on our planet, in the world, and all of these things, if once we get beyond, you know, we're walking down the street in our town and we see the town and we see our friends and the people and all that. But we also don't realize that within the spaces between our civilization, between pieces of our civilization, between our towns and our villages. There are spaces, and in those spaces exists other forms of life that have just as much consciousness, if not more consciousness, than we do. But they exist there. So we've spoken with Thomas Hughes earlier in many shows about the Sasquatch people, the hairy folk. A lot of these beings are relatively neutral or benign, don't really care about us. You know, like an ant farm. Imagine there are ants of all different sizes. There are giant ants in Africa. What about under the ground? There might be enormous ants bigger than us, you know. Open your mind to these possibilities that we're not the normal size of human in the galaxy, and there may be much bigger humans and much smaller humans. Humanoids, you know, people with, you know, a head and two legs and two arms and sorts of things, but, you know, different kinds of faces. All of those things. So we exist in a very small, you know, patches on this very large planet, which I believe is inhabited by many, many other life forms. Life is teeming, you know, we are not alone at all. And here we are, we're in a tiny little box, and we've been, we are fed by information from a little screen in the corner of our room, and it sounds just like one of these dystopian nightmare science fiction books that I used to read in the 1970s when I was a kid. So, within the context of that, we have a group of fourth dimensional entities who are acting through three dimensional entities and controlling the masses so that we create in en masse very large amounts of psychic energy, which is traded in for forms of technology and other things. Our DNA is traded for technology and other things, and all sorts of things are traded that we don't realize are being traded. You know, we might be like a an enormous TV show in on the galactic TV network. You never know. It might be just like the Truman Show. The Truman Show is just a metaphor for our reality, and there are people watching us all day, every day. Imagine the Earth is a reality show, you know. So, talking of reality shows, that reality show is a format, like The Office is a format of television. And my guest tonight, Ms. Seven, created a format through hard work, through dedication, through a great tragedy that she turned into a success for herself. And then, in offering it out, she was treated rather unfairly, let's put it very, very mildly indeed. She's been tapped and followed and generally harassed in all sorts of things. So, Seven, are you still with us?
I am indeed. Just listening to your reference to the Truman Show, and that's exactly spot on of my life over the last 10 years. It's basically been that I've been in the Truman Show and watching my life play out on television and various different publications while the public were unaware. And it got to some very harrowing points, but you were spot on with that.
Can you name some of the things that that you've spawned, as it were, or rather that has spawned from your creation that people would recognize, you know, particularly obviously, you know, that you may be dealing with British TV, but I'm sure you're talking about international syndication and things like that.
Absolutely. If people want to go on to the Farrell Report, and that's www.thefarrell.com report.net, and they go to page 48. There is a list of just some of the productions, and I'm going to read them out that you may well have heard of. There's Dancing with Stars, which is an American version of Strictly Come Dancing, which is also comes from my documents. You may have heard of diet doctors. You might have heard of You Are What You Eat, 10 Years Younger, The Games, Dancing on Ice, Fat Nation. There was a competition because in the midst of all this, after my first set of documents was stolen in 2003, I went to a lawyer in 2004 and she ended up stealing a disc which had a script on it, and then that got converted into a number of different productions, which are, some people might have heard of. There was a television drama that launched on ITV based on my script. And this is how blatant they were. They didn't actually even change the name of the characters that were in my script. The script, the drama was called The Walk. And that was based on a true story. A friend of mine had gone on the walk in Australia. She gave up her job in a shoe shop in the 80s. She used to work in a shoe shop on the Edgware Road and decided that she was going to buy a ticket and go to Australia, and she ended up meeting a man who was on the walk in Australia, which basically is a term for giving up transportation and basically anything that's material and going on this walk. You give up all your worldly possessions and you walk everywhere. And she did this for a number of years. And when she came back to London and she told me of her journeys, I had to write the script. It was just amazing story. And, you know, being a creative person who loves to write, when I heard this, her experience, I actually turned it into a script. Now, that script was on a disc when I went to see Tamsin Allen of Feynman and Partners. And she, in discovering that they'd stolen my documents from my multimedia platform and was selling my work all over the world, she in turn also sold the script which was on the disc, and that got turned into a competition called Finish This, End of Story, which was on BBC, and it was given, the script was given to a number of famous authors, Faye Weldon, Marion Keyes, what's the other one? There's a whole host of other authors.
Linda LaPlante.
And each... Sorry?
Not Linda LaPlante.
Sorry? No, she wasn't involved as far. I don't recognize that name. But basically, the script, my script was turned into a nationwide competition, and each of these authors were given a chapter of the script to offer up to the public to write the other side of it. And what's the author that did Adrian Mole? I can't remember her name now. But she was the only one that was honest, and she basically, she made it very clear that she had not written the chapter that she was given, and that it was an unknown author. Obviously, they didn't give her my name. But she obviously was suspicious of what was going on and where this script had come from. But anyway, this was turned into a competition called Finish This, End of Story. It was also turned into a campaign which was launched in America as well, I think Canada and a number of different countries, Australia, the UK, and it was called... Britain on the Move, some people might remember that, and they had panels and all sorts of people of why people should give up sitting in front of the television and should go on the walk, and all different aspects of my scripts was turned into all these different competitions and various other things. Yes, so some people might recognize that. Fit Farm is another production. I mean, there's a whole host of things. Fat Nation, Body On, Celebrity, what was it called? Celebrity Fit Club. There was The Big Fat Doc. There's Biggest Loser. Some of these productions you may well have heard of. And effectively, what I created was a new genre, which didn't exist prior to the theft of my work. Because I'd done a hell of a lot of research before putting the thing together. I didn't want to waste my time. before putting the thing together, I did lots and lots of research, which all went to become part of my court case, and it was all within the evidence. The research into television productions, what kind of television productions had been around prior to the theft of my work, and of course they didn't have any of these productions. Most, if not all of them, were launched in 2004 and onwards. And from then on, it basically spawned this whole sort of genre of bringing fitness and examining fitness and bringing celebrities into the fold. That all came, which was all documented in my production documents, which was stolen by Helen Alexander. So, that's just to give some people an idea. And the kind of companies that are involved, that have become the beneficiaries are BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Endemol, NTL, which disbanded after I won my case in 2006 and became Virgin Media. There's Celador Entertainment. There's Scottish Media Groups, which have now changed their name to Scottish TV. And they're all very big companies, and the work has been sold in 150 countries around the world. They've given it different titles, and, you know, basically they bought the franchise or they bought a license to promote and show, screen the productions. And none of these people are aware that I am in the background, you know, never been paid, even though I won my case. I won every single hearing that I went to. I had 14 witnesses who all provided their own evidence. And my case is one of the most clearest examples of corruption in the judiciary that's ever been known, you know, because it was so blatant. You know, they didn't produce any defense. They didn't show up in court. And they got fake statements written by people. They obviously got off the street and paid them money. They were aware that obviously perjury would be coming, knocking at their door if they were to sign any of these statements. So they actually got unknown people to sign statements for them. The whole thing was as shoddy as it can get. I mean, it was so blatant the whole way that the case was shut down. The judge in question who ruled in my favor, which you will hear, and you will also hear the productions on the courtroom audios, which is on the website of the Farrell Report. If you click down on the links, I'm not sure exactly what link it is, but if you go through the website, you'll find courtroom audios of the actual court hearings. And the judge could only rule in my favor, even if he hated me on sight or whatever. There was just so much evidence that he couldn't do anything else. There was no way that he could, you couldn't bluff that one, you know. And what you will see is what emerged was a completely fabricated judgment. Now, every judgment that comes from a court is generated from the courtroom audios and also from the stenographer. A stenographer is somebody who sits beside the judge within the courtroom and types out while the hearing is taking place. It's basically verbatim writing out everything that's being said inside the courtroom. Now, these notes, together with the courtroom audios, is what generates a judgment. You can't have a judgment which is created from thin air, which is completely different set of circumstances, different people, taking people's names out. That is an example of complete and utter corruption, which is what took place in my case. Now, Judge Pumphrey, after my courtroom hearings, which was in 2006, the case itself was actually supposed to be heard in July of 2005, but because I had become aware of the plot to blow up the London Underground and the trains in June of 2005 and tried to take injunctions against the parties, unsuccessfully, I went to the magistrate's court and I showed them the evidence, I told them what was going on, that this Enron scale corruption was taking place with all these companies and all these individuals on the take involved in racketeering and organized crime, etc., etc. I showed him all the evidence, and basically he said the only thing that I could do was to take action against the police, who had also been alerted. The Met police had also been alerted. But unfortunately, they had fixers in every single public authority, from the Met police to the courts to, you know.
Who can you turn to?
How it works. Absolutely. There was no one.
That's their strategy. They strategize to cover everything. I mean, we see this in all forms of this mind control situation, through the whole it's a game to them, you know. Seeing it from the other side, you know, and you see these films, and the guy's going to the psychiatrist, and the, you know, and he's going to the doctor, and all the doctor and the psychiatrist, they all meet at the country club on Sunday, you know, and discuss the guy and what they're going to do with him, you know. It's like that.
That's exactly how it works. It's like Rosemary's Babies. If anybody's ever seen that, you know, the person who is being targeted is surrounded by a conspiracy of the highest proportions. And I use the word conspiracy because they've even managed to manipulate that word, which is actually a very legal term, for two and more people getting together to commit a crime. In the 1977 Criminal Thefts Act, that's a very legal term, conspiracy, but somehow they've managed to manipulate the public psyche to believing that if you talk about a conspiracy, it means something that doesn't exist, which is a load of nonsense. A conspiracy is a crime in law, and that's as simple as it is. And yeah, you basically are surrounded by a whole host of these demonic people who are all on the take, who are all very much aware of what's going on, and they will just lie all the way down the line. And it's only when you sort of recognize what's going on and you have to pull yourself away from it, because, you know, they've pretty much sewn that whole situation up. Every public office, whether you go to the Office of Judicial Complaints, whether you go to the police, whether you go to the MPs, your MP, you'll find that every single one of them will be chanting from the same hymn sheet. You know, they'll all be told what to say, exactly when to say it, to try to make out what you're talking about is not factual or is not actually taking place. But, of course, we all know that they're being bribed to do it. And it's very shoddy. In most cases, it's very shoddy. In fact, what happened after I won my case in 2006 was the barrister that they got, who was a young... he looked like a cokehead. I mean, I'm just being real with you. He just looked like some guy who's high on coke, who would sell his own mother for money. That's what he looked like. And you will hear on the courtroom audios him literally more or less begging the judge to get rid of my case, and the judge telling him repeatedly, I'm sorry, it's not strikeable, cannot get rid of it, I cannot chuck this case out because it would be in breach of the law to do so. And what he actually did was, after the case went in my favor, he wrote up a bogus judgment, and we've caught him doing that in other occasions, in other hearings before other judges. Whenever it sort of got too close to the bone and, you know, they were about to be shocked, as it were, he would try to sabotage it by writing a false court order and fraudulently changing what the judge had stated. And he did this after I won the case. Now, I reported him to the Bar Council offices, which are in Holborn, London. And this fool actually had the audacity to burgle the Bar Council offices, to steal the evidence. They actually wrote it to me, and it's actually in the report as an exhibit for people to have a look at. The Bar Council actually wrote to me and said, there's been a burglary in our offices and all your files have been stolen. Surprise, surprise. Because my case is a case which opens a can of worms of the most vilest, foulest order. And by any means necessary, you know, be it illegal or whatever, they wanted to shut it down, and that's exactly what they did. But before I go on, I want to give people some names before we proceed, and I forget to do it, because this is something that affects everyone. These people affect everyone. They've put themselves in positions of power. Now, in the latter day, over the last, you know, few years, they've become more visible. Before, they were very much in the shadows. When I spoke about them, people were like, who are they? You know, I mean, most people didn't know who they were. They'd know about their organizations, but they didn't actually know the individual by name. But now they've become much more prominent in the public eye. So, you know, in their quest to actually protect themselves at any means necessary, they've put themselves to the highest echelons of society. So let me go one by one, and I will read out their names. You've got Christopher Gossage, who worked for a law firm called Russell's Media Law Firm, which are based in Regent Street, London. Now, I advise any creative people out there, if you've got material and you want lawyers, you're into music, you're into film, whatever you're into, do not go into this law firm. You could risk your whole life by doing so. You could compromise not just your safety, but the safety of your family and friends. I advise strongly, stay away from this law firm. Let your friends know Russell's Media Law Firm is a no-go area. There's another guy in that law firm called Tony English. So these are two names, they're partners in the law firm, and it's a criminal cartel. Okay, so we've got Richard Hanna, who was operating from Clarion and NTL, which are now Virgin Media. Now, I advise anybody out there, if you've got your internet supply from Virgin Media, shut it down. These people are criminals. They are criminals of the highest order. They have blood on their hands. They are literally abusing the public on the money that you give them for your subscriptions, for internet or whatever. They're involved in crimes against humanity, and I cannot stress enough, the only way that we as a people, as a public, members of the public, can actually, you know, challenge these people is by removing our monies from them, boycotting these companies. It was done in South Africa. Companies like Barclays Bank or whatever, they used to have this place called Sun City, and then musicians made songs, don't play in Sun City, and eventually it toppled the whole apartheid regime. Now, I'm not saying that it's great out there now, but it had a great influence, and what was instrumental in the public becoming armed, if you like, to be effective as a tool, is the fact that A, people exposed it, people sung about it, people talked about it, until it shut it down. And that's exactly the way that we're going to have to proceed now, because these people are being protected. So I'm going to proceed. Helen Alexander. Now, during the court case, she gave her name as Helen Mary Alexander. But now, when we've since looked at the internet, she's removed herself and given herself a new middle name as Helen Ann Alexander, as if to try to distance herself from the whole shebang and the whole sorry effect. Now, she was the commissioner for Scottish Media Groups. She also worked, prior to going to Scottish Media, she was with the BBC for a considerable amount of time. I'm not sure entirely how long. It was something like 10 years or more. But she was definitely very, you know, she's considered to be a media mogul, if you like. And she was the actual person who stole my documents. And she instigated one of the worst crimes against humanity as far as 7/7 is concerned, and the shooting of Jean-Charles Menendez. We've got Jim Manson, who is her accomplice, another one of Scottish Media Group's employees. Now, you will see in the Farrell report, I'm going to try and find out what page. I know we don't have a great deal of time, but Jim Manson actually, in him trying to make himself look like an innocent person, was the key eyewitness at Glasgow Airport. In 2007, there was a staged attack, false flag attack, which took place. Now, if you go onto the Scottish TV website, they probably pulled it down because I've been very vocal about it. I've done quite a few interviews exposing this, as well as Tony Farrell and various other people who have been exposing the truth behind 7/7. So I'm not sure that if you go on to the Scottish TV website whether you'll still see it there, but it certainly was there while we were putting this report together, and it is actually featured within the report. Now, if you do get the opportunity to have a look at the footage, you will see that Jim Manson is standing at Glasgow Airport, apparently, according to him, saying that he's giving an eyewitness testimony after witnessing a terrorist attack. However, when you look at the scene, you'll see that he's the only person there, and it's a very contrived, staged scenario. It is very clear to see that. Anybody who's worked in media will see that this is just a TV production. You know, you've got to remember, these people work in television. They're TV producers and executives. They make feature movies, TV shows, TV dramas. They're very used to blowing things up. They're very used to having, creating any scene that you can think about in your mind. They're used to putting this together. It's very easy to do, and they have the license to do it, and they do it, and they sell it to the public as if it's a real event.
That's
but
right.
In fact, we're looking at that is a whole staged scenario.
Exactly. I mean, so let's just look at some things. An example of that would be like Doctor Who. We can see the visual effects that have developed through TV history by watching Doctor Who through its time, because you can see the kind of visual effects that they were capable of, and that was the leading edge. That was the BBC's leading edge, is Doctor Who. So anything that they can do on Doctor Who, they can do on the so-called news. And I believe that's what they've been doing. And I believe...
Of course it is.
...that the BBC is a part of a terrorist organisation that we call the Cabal.
Absolutely.
And that they're part of Murder Incorporated.
Absolutely.
That they're, but, you know, to substantiate that, there is a website called abeldanger.net, abeldanger.net. I mean, there is a lot of information that is coming through 7 tonight. There's a lot of information out there that also ties in and totally corroborates what you've been talking about. All of the things that...
Absolutely.
The M.O. of them, the Cabal, the Jesuits, the Archons, whoever they are, all of them together, they're the influence that we call evil. And right now, this influence is tightening its grip on the world. And we're looking at what they call the New World Order, just kind of almost clicking into place. And what seems to be happening is that it's like just being able to throw a shoe into the big mechanism that locks the whole thing up.
Absolutely.
And because, you know, these are the people who are, they want to... All right. It's not about who they are. If you look at a farmer and the way he treats his cattle, He just sees his cattle as, you know, he doesn't call them Daisy anymore. He's, you know, they've got a tag stuck in their ear, clamped in their ear from almost from the point that they're born. I see it, you know, that's where I live, you know, I see these things all the time. And the farmer really doesn't spend much time caring for them, just, you know, he's just herding them into, you know, literally herding them in. And really, that's the attitude that the group that we call the cabal or the elite, that's what they have to us. I mean, we're like a big fields of for them, we're like a cash crop. You know, they milk the cows for milk. They milk us for our fear and our effort, our work, our ability to ingeniously move things around, our ability to, you know, we do all the work for them. That's the way it is, you know. But I think at a point we are now becoming more able to see things as them. We have graduated to our own godhood. These are the people who called themselves gods in days of old. They have long lives. They can inhabit multiple bodies. They are the empire. They are the octopus. They are echelon. They are, you know, let's trigger all the NSA keywords, shall we? You know, it doesn't really matter. I don't care. You don't care either. Well, you do care. We both care. But in a way, it's like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But I know there's going to be a happy ending. So I know that something is going to invert this whole juggernaut that is headed our way. I know it's going to make it crash because I know that my future is bright. Either that or I'm completely insane. But I don't think I'm insane.
You're definitely not that. You're definitely not insane. It's definitely, you know, one of the sanest minds I've come across. You know, I mean, I see that they're trying very hard at this time to prevent the inevitable. And the inevitable is, I mean, they know, I mean, let's take the Farrell report, for instance. This report has the capacity to shut it all down. Just on itself, because it's naming the individuals who were behind committing atrocities to innocent members of the public, to shield themselves from being, you know, going to prison for organized crime. Now, obviously these people have multiple agendas. It's not just about shielding themselves. They also have this world domination ideology. They're also very kind of Nazi affiliated. They're also very satanic.
Yeah.
So there's a number of reasons why these people do what they do, but the reality is that none of it can stand up in the light of day. Whatever their plans are, they can only go so far. They can only carry this stuff out in, you know, in the dark corners and recesses where nobody's looking, when they think nobody's looking. But right now, the whole world is looking at them. And right now, the whole world knows who they are. And I have ensured, if it's the last thing I ever do, that people will know exactly what was behind the 7/7 bombings and shooting of John Charles. And they'll know some of the key people that were behind it. And these people have to account for what they've done. Now, if they're not going to volunteer it anytime soon, even though that would be the smartest move, right now, from where my vantage point and from where I'm sitting, the smartest thing that they could do at this time would be to bring the people that I'm naming forward, because we've got real evidence against each and every one of them, and do damage limitation. Because if they think it's not going to come down, it is coming down, and they're aware it's coming down. There's infighting between them. Now, all that needs to happen is that for every single person who's listening to this broadcast, to actually download the Farrell report, to send it on, to basically get this thing to be viral in the very same way that when the whistleblower Ben Fellows exposed G4S Securities as, you know, planning and being instrumental in a false flag attack in the Olympics, once that came out, you know, the mainstream media had to pick up on it. Now, the difference in this scenario is that these people are mainstream media. They control mainstream media, along with people like, what's his face? News of the World. Yeah. You know, and he's, you know, they're all connected, and they're all part of this nasty little game that's going on. Now, my key concern is the individuals that I'm mentioning, because I know for a fact that they had involvement. Now, obviously, it's not just them. It's a wider network, and we're talking about a vast network that's international, with people in all key positions of power, if you want to call it power. I use that word very, very loosely. Key positions of economic power. I want to make that distinction, because I don't consider their satanic stuff to be powerful. I believe love is the most powerful force. And I think everything that deals with fairness, justice, harmony, and the macro rather than the micro is what's powerful. Now, as the macro, we have collectively the power to pull these institutions down. The only thing that's stopping us is us. It's every single person that's listening to this broadcast. If you have the ears to hear what I'm saying, please listen to me. I'm asking you, I'm urging you, I'm begging you all, for your own safety, for your grandchildren's safety, and for the safety and well-being, and for the love of the people whose lives have been taken. You know, this is a monumentally, phenomenally bad situation. And these people are getting up every morning, going to the same offices and engineering more crimes. Each day they engineer more ways of preventing themselves from having to account. Now, each time they invent a new way of having to account, that could involve you. That could involve any single person that's out there, because we don't know what the next thing that they're going to do. Obviously, they know that we're becoming hip to the plot, and each year that goes by that they recognize that more people are aware, the more afraid they become. And with that fear, it translates to them committing more atrocities as means of covering up what they've done. So it's basically a whole mess, and nobody can decipher anything. And so what we've managed to do, and Tony Farrell has managed to do as the UK's one of the top senior intelligence analysts in the UK, I should say ex-intelligence analyst, using his skills of 17 years of experience he's put in this report, and that's no light thing. He has come up against agent after agent and people who are trying to malign him and shut him down for doing what he's done. He's really put his neck out there and his life on the line to do what he did. And he'll tell you himself that his journey with me as a targeted individual, he experienced firsthand some of the madness that has been taking place in my life. Being followed, he was filmed inside my property while he was putting this report together, because he spent about 2 months inside my premises. And we had several meetings and we were followed everywhere. I mean, it was very terrifying for him in particular, because for me, I've climatized towards it now. I just see it as a way of life. But for new people coming into experience what I've experienced, it is shocking, you know. So on the basis of that, I really can't stress enough that the public has to support this, support this report from getting to everybody's ears, because people can no longer go to the offices of these people. These are dangerous human beings who literally are luring innocent members of the public into their offices and engineering crimes that will murder masses of people. I mean, I don't know how to stress that enough. But anyway, I want to continue before I forget, because last time I was on air, I wasn't able to say everybody's names because it finished
before.
Let me quick finish.
We got about 8 minutes left.
Do I have enough time before the break?
We've got about 8 minutes left.
Sorry. Okay, so let me finish. We've got Scottish media groups, which are now Scottish TV. Boycott that organisation. Make placards. Let them know that you're boycotting them. Tams and Allen of Beinman and Partners. You'll see that they opened up, after 7/7 bombings, they opened up a, on page 68 of the Barrow report, you'll see a link to terrorist cells and terrorism. They opened this new link about terrorism after 7/7. And it doesn't get more plain sight and blatant than that. You've got Derek Rosenblatt of Ronald Fletcher & Co. Boycott this man's law practice. Beinman & Partners is also a law practice, by the way. And so let your friends know, stay away from there. There's so many people that have come forward as being targeted after going into their offices. It only takes you going into their offices to complain about somebody once. So please, 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 for your own safety and your family's safety, do not go to these firms. And then the last but not least is Christopher Ball. Now, we have 10 individuals and corporations in total. The case, as I said, was scheduled to be heard in July and actually got heard after I came out of hiding for 3 months. I was in hiding for 3 months during the bombings. And my case did get to court in 2006, in which time I won. And the judge in question, Pumphrey, also was found dead in his flat under suspicious circumstances in 2007. There have been a number of suspicious deaths in relation to this case, two of them being some very close friends of mine, both found dead. They didn't know each other, but they both were on my radio show. And on the 17th of May of 2012, both of my friends that had been on my show were found dead in completely different but suspicious circumstances. So there have been a few suspicious deaths in relation to the case. There's also Sarah Mulvey, who was a Channel 4 executive selling my work. She was found dead in her flat in 2010. So we're not talking of any light thing here. We're talking about people that have lost their minds. You know, I've always prayed that they would confess what they've done and, you know, that people would somehow, you know, encourage them to come forward and, you know, somehow we get to some resolution which is healthy for everyone. But, you know, it's 10 years and they're still not stopping and they don't look like they're going to be stopping anytime soon. So it's really up to us to ensure that they are made to account. So lobby your MPs, contact the government, you know, send them the report, let everybody send them the report so that they can't ignore it. They can't shove it under the carpet.
It should be made into a musical.
Yeah, oh my goodness. What a horrible musical that would be.
You know, it's a bit, we could make it like The Producers, you know. It's like we're going to make a film about the real ugly reality of reality. And nobody's going to like it, nobody's going to want to go, so it'll be a brilliant tax loss.
Yeah, but it ends up being a success, right?
Exactly, exactly. It's so bad, it's good, because, anyway.
Absolutely.
So, Seven, have you finished your list?
Yes, I've read out all the names, so that people can know who to stay away from. And obviously, I'm very concerned for public safety. I always have been, you know, I've always been motivated to kind of alert people. So that helps me to help people to help themselves, if you like. But I can quickly run through them again. Christopher Gossage, Russell's Media Law Firm, Richard Hanna, Clarion NTR, Virgin Media, Helen Alexander, Jim Manson, Scottish Media Groups, now Scottish TV, Tamsin Allen of Beinman & Partners, Derek Rosenblatt of Ronald Fletcher & Co. and Christopher Vaughan. those are the people that you need to let people know that you know that were involved. If you don't believe me, read the FARA report. Look at the evidence. Don't take my word for it. It's, you know, I've got nothing to gain. I've only gained evil for talking. I've got nothing good from speaking out in public. Up to this day, I mean, I've met some wonderful people like yourself, some angels, but it hasn't benefited me in any shape or form to speak as I speak. But I speak because I have to. I have a duty to those who were, whose lives were taken, and I have a duty to the members of the public. So please, 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 everyone out there, you know, have a look at the report and share it and lobby your MPs. Make some noise about this, you know, don't just let it, don't just switch off the radio and say, oh, that was interesting. You know, we need your voices, we need your energy, we need to bring these people to account. Yeah?
Seven. Wow, brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to play, you said you like Joni Mitchell, and I'm going to play probably an appropriate track, Help Me. It's by Joni Mitchell, just after the end of the show. So thank you very much for coming on and sharing this. I know this is, I mean, to me, this is really important information. And if anybody you know who makes music, for instance, can download the show from the Wolf Spirit Archives or from my Ever Beyond Archives, and you'll find somebody who can clip out the end and put some put a few beats behind it, but just, you know, have a list of those names or something like that. Know anybody around the local area? No need.
Get creative. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah. So.
Thank you. Anyway.
Thank you, my dear. And with that, I'd like to thank everybody for listening to Ever Beyond this evening. And stay tuned. We're going to be going into some healings and meditations with Frank Jordan. And after that, Eva Moore with her guest. I don't know what's happening tonight. It's always very spontaneous. So thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very much, Seven. And
thank you.
I always say that. I'm getting really... I always have this thing. Oh, there it is. About finding the little jingle that I should forget. Anyway, there we go. Beyond.